Thanks a lot, Joan. I don't feel like a distinguished Pittsburgh poet, but thanks everybody very much for coming here tonight, and thanks so much to Joan and Jimmy for running the series and for inviting me to read. Is the sound okay?
Yep.
And I'm thrilled to be reading with Leslie and Sherry. And the last time I read here in the summer, I kept reading poems with snow in them, so I'm trying to be a little more seasonally appropriate. So this is called Adirondacks May. Let it be night when you plunge on wheels through the ravenous forest. Bats, ecstatic, twist into illumined view and shoot upward. The lewd-faced possum trails his nude tail into the spotlight of your high beams. At the bend, there, nibbling, the doe bares her throat to your oncoming glare, holds you sideways in the gaze of her one eye and light. And you see that it's your own slow longing she's captured in the throat, the tongue, in the lithe, submissive body. Let the trees claw at wind. The moon, half occluded, is your lost eye opening. The road is a nerve stem through hemispheres of trees, and your tense, rabbit heart is the double blade of light calling out to the dark. Am I too close to the mic? We have a difference of opinion here. Okay. This is called Boy in the Game House. Empty house at the top of a ladder, booth in the air above a diamond of settled dust, a field at rest, no game to announce. Give us this house, a girl and boy, both eight. It's our ship, rocket, jet, becomes our lookout, hideout, whatever we choose. It's so long ago, small town, we could choose which empty spaces to enter, which ladders to climb. In make-believe, the girl becomes a boy, grows sharp, hard as a diamond. It's clear that all the fun stuff's just for boys, so she cuts her hair short, plays ball in any game that lets her in. High up in our game house, the light planes. The boy and I choose worlds until the world dims, until the ladder creaks. Something sneaking toward our diamond light. Long shadow at the door becomes a man, tall body, soft face of a boy. He won't speak to the girl. He wants the boy to play. His zipper's down, his hand, become my new friend. Tell her to climb down the ladder. She won't. He won't. It's murky. Another game just for boys. I can't remember. Try choosing that she stays. The image fractures like a diamond's faces. Turn it. Which plane of the diamond is truth? Which imagined? I want the boy untouched. Man backs down the ladder. Girl protects her friend. I want to become the one who saved him. I want out of this game I couldn't even play in. Why not just choose one truth? Choose us both free. Boy becomes the man he wants to be. Diamond empty. Game over. Let me off the hook down the ladder. Thank you. I'm reading this poem for Aubrey. It's called For Patty. I don't know what killed you, so I say it was the old wild life come knocking. I hadn't seen you since Cotati, Petaluma, Santa Rosa in skin white as hospital walls, eyes dropped back deep and gone solid. Patty, my absent, absent one. Before that were 13. In the nowhere of our Bible Belt town, black sky, black highway, black lake. Patty, my 1960s, my freight train howl, my cowtown shithole, my one knee on Main Street, my girls' room cools, my smuggled fifths, my conned hooch, my under the bleachers feels, my payphone bomb scares, my swords into plowshares, my tear gas parades, my cornfield arrests, my 15, 16, my arm in arm partner into dark water. Thank you. So this poem is from my friend Carrie right here. It's called Girl in a Coonskin Cap, circa 1953. So Carrie showed me this picture of herself when she was 3 years old wearing a coonskin cap. And it's such an evocative picture. And so knowing things about her and imagining the scene, I wrote this poem. And then I talked to her poem has nothing to do with the actual reality, which is also just fascinating. So she needs to write about that. But so this is all mostly my imagination. Girl in a coonskin cap, circa 1953, for Carrie. Only her sneakers face the camera. She's three, poised for a stump speech on a flip bucket, a heart sewn into the bib of her overalls. The plump cheeks beam. Fantastic animal hairdo. It lifts her 3 inches. The striped tail adorns her shoulder like she grew it herself. All around, the outskirts of a Michigan town she'll later dub Bland Vapids. The flatlands. Her body swivels west, toward the Rockies she's just invented in all their strata, down to the 3-billion-year-old core. Then east, toward the Appalachians, whose white mists rise out of gorges like sketches of lives she might one day muscle into color. So much to investigate and dissect before the classroom's sealed windows and its infant crawl toward afternoon, toward the far edge of the 50s. The frontiers are out there in the narratives of arrowheads and bones, the alternating currents of the brain, the body's sweet topography. Mick Jagger, thank God, is not far around the corner. And Grace Slick will arrive at the White House for Trisha Nixon's Fisk women's tea, hiding 600 micrograms of acid to spike the president's drink. Meanwhile, the sky is a milk-based soup. Behind the baby face, so full of appetite and savvy, chicken wire rises to the height of her cap, then a long block of barracks like a stuck train, then phone poles, a line of double crosses. Thank you. Oh, I just have the cities wrong. That's not so bad. So this is called Vacant Rooms at Hotel Infinity. We gather in a lodge with rooms stacked on hidden room like gaps among branches of spruce. The cat is small again and in my pocket. I'm small again and in parentheses. My father names the constellations. The sky has more stories than the library. The swan that ate the scorpion, that bit the hunter, that shot the centaur. The dipper that led the slaves northward, it filled their drinking gourds with wine and drowned their enemies. How far up does the sky go? Forever, he says. That's called infinity. It has to stop somewhere. Where? When it hits the ceiling? Well, what's on the other side of that ceiling? I crouch and grab tufts of wet grass. The earth is spinning and forever. I could be flung out like a spore. Forever is time, not space. Does space only go on in time? Time can go on in a very small room with tall shadows and light seeping in through the door crack. The sky today is like gray insulation. The cat is like gray insulation. She makes room beneath chairs and tables, in cupboards and boxes and bags. I drew a ceiling on top of the sky, and a room above, and another ceiling, and another room, and so on, because I could not imagine infinity without partitions. I could not conceive of the sky not stopping, so I made it stop again and again, and imagined instead an infinity of stopping, an infinity of ceilings and rooms, and rockets tearing holes in the ceilings, and stars trapped and gathered along the edges like iridescent moths. Thanks, Les. So I'm going to read a couple of really new pieces. I think they're prose poems. Maybe Ellen will tell me after whether they truly are prose poems. They're prose pieces, and my friend and fellow writer Sharon McDermott helped me out with them a little bit, so I want to thank her. But don't blame her if they're not finished, because they're really not finished. So this is called Email Subject Line Hospice. I'm looking for a better title. How did the air change just then, she thought, and then lost the thought. The curdling light, the flickering screen, the constant ringing in her ears. Hard surfaces of tables spiked with metallic flecks. What do they call that stuff? Formica? something to do with ants. A public buzz from inside the light or inside the screen, or maybe not a buzz at all, not a noise, but a flicker that feels like a buzz. He had a buzz cut, said Aaron yesterday, looming over her after class. So you'd think he'd be like some military guy, but he was like, seedy, I mean, what do you mean, she said. I mean, like, seedy. Well, how did you know, she said. No? What about him was seedy, she said. Well, he was like, you know, his clothes were like two sizes too big, and he pulled his head so you could barely see his face, and every crappy thing he had on was like black or some other non-color. What else, she said. He was walking around with a weed whacker, said Aaron. But that was yesterday. You can tell she doesn't want to get to what happened today. She's doing that detour thing, going on about buzz cuts or weed whackers or formica, if that's even what you call it, about anything but the actual thing. Today is wet. This morning in Shakespeare, the students wanted badly to be sleeping, until she asked if they thought Bottom, with his donkey head, actually wanted to eat the fairies instead of befriending them. I mean, look at their names. Then all the students' faces lifted, the private sleepiness of each like a screen door sliding open, and they stared as if she were the dream, and what they wanted badly now was to waken themselves away from her. Back in grad school, the seminar table made her hungry, and once she said, in this story, I think the Thanksgiving turkey is the dead father, and her classmates stared that same stare. But the prof, a man older than God, said, of course, they're carving the dead father and eating him with cranberry sauce. But that's much farther back than her earlier tangent, much further from the now of an hour ago that she's been sitting on like a bruise. This afternoon in the wobbly light, in the inner ear ringing of a phone or doorbell that will not stop ringing, at the hesitant screen in the poison light, the sidewalks wet through arched windows, she scrolled by a subject line, like a light blinking red on a mountain road through agitated fog, and she kept on scrolling. She didn't stop, didn't open, thinking, maybe that's the name of an article he's sending, or maybe it's one of his cold jokes with an aftertaste of fear, and then thinking, no, he doesn't do that anymore. So this is another prose piece, and right now it's just called Freddy. I'm thinking about a manzana, says Freddy, and blushes. I mean apple, he says, and all of us laugh, because he poured one language so smoothly into another that none of us noticed a border. Tall students in their child desks at twilight, Legos and crayons, and a slinky on the shelf. It's 1985, and they need English like food. Take Frankie, take Freddy, Federico, solo in L.A. at 18. Asylum is a word he learned long before leaving his country, and it's still just a word, 6 months into his visa, just a sound with a sigh at its center and a shutdown ending. Today they chose a sentence from their mother tongues to translate. If they see you coming down from the volcano, they will kill you, wrote Freddy. Cryptic phrases manufactured in English have led Freddy to this room and this desk. In El Salvador, empty the ocean means wipe out whole villages. We sing along with the Beatles, and I worry they'll pick up crappy grammar. Freddy's blushing like a red delicious. Tatiana passed him a folded note. I picture the spirals of her Cyrillic-style cursive, black ribbons on a white page, and I wonder if she's written him phrases from the song. If I trust in you, oh please. If I love you too, oh please. I have found him a free lawyer with a ponytail. I have written letters and arranged them in block paragraphs so they look like government buildings, but I feel like a slinky set loose on the stairs, pulled open with each slow move, and with each move, I drop a step down. So one more, thanks for being such a great audience. This is called Exposure One. I have a bunch of poems called Exposure, so this is one of them. Exposure One. I was talking to a shrink about lack of focus, and she said, here's an extreme example. A woman cleaning her house who stops scrubbing the kitchen to get a rag from the closet, and from there, see, she'd started dusting the bedroom and stopped to get cleaner from the kitchen, so she resumes dusting the bedroom, forgetting the kitchen, until she walks to the bathroom to dampen the dust cloth and sees the cabinet open and empty it, and remembered she'd been cleaning the cabinet when she went to the kitchen to get cleaner and noticed she'd been scouring the sink when she, well, in fact, the therapist said only a few of these words, and I plugged myself right in. I am that extreme example, I said, but are you sure it slows my cleaning? And she said, ah, but the woman cleaning is a metaphor, a capsule representation of actual behavior. Thus, literal speed of metaphorical cleaning is irrelevant. And I thought then of cleaning as metaphor for therapy, a monologue confined to one room within a circumscribed time. And would a portion of my brain be cleaner when I emerged? I thought of monologue as metaphor for type A cleaning, and of my more expansive style as dialogue among all rooms, which are rooms of the self, another shrink told me, when I dreamed the delicious dream of more and more rooms opening up off my one room apartment. More space, I rejoiced. And he said, no, more parts of the self. And I loved that too, my very selves as multiplying square footage. And then he said, more parts of Barbara. And when he did that third person thing, I thought several things at once. Oh God, he's one of those. If his face were enormous, it would make an excellent climbing wall. Is there another Barbara? And if so, what's the point of extra rooms if I have to share?
Thanks.